Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Absolute truth. There are many Puranas in Vedic literatures, but this Purana is unique in that it touches on the subject of the Absolute Truth. It concentrates. All Vedic knowledge was summarized by Vyasadeva in his Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra, in which he starts by calling attention to the subject matter. He begins the Vedanta Sutra by calling attention to the subject matter. Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Now the subject to be inquired about is the Absolute Truth. Now, generally among philosophers, it is considered that the Absolute Truth is one only. As stated in the Upanishads, Ekam Advitiyam. The Absolute Truth is one only, there is no second. Because Absolute means that which is not dependent upon anything else for its substantiality. There is Absolute Truth and there are relative truths. Relative truth means it depends upon something else. It depends upon something else for its existence and for its very description. Just like if we say a tall person. Among pygmies, a tall person may be 1.5 meters high. But among Russians, you'd have to be more than 2 meters high to be considered tall. So, what is to be defined? Everything is relative in this material world. In material existence, everything is relative. But the Absolute Truth means that which is not dependent upon anything else. The Sanskrit word for absolute is nirankush. Ankush means a rod for driving elephants. And nirankush means without an ankush, without any control, that which is independent of all other categories. So if the Absolute Truth is self-existent and self-effulgent, then it may be considered that there is no other category. It doesn't require any other category to describe it. And therefore, the impersonalists consider that there is only the Absolute Truth, there is nothing else. Therefore, any description of anything else is simply an illusion. Only the Absolute Truth exists and nothing else exists. As they say, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, the Absolute Truth is reality and everything else is false. However, this philosophy does not correspond with reality. If we ask the impersonalist that you say everything is false or everything is one, it's all the same, then we can say, what about the money in your pocket? If you think it's false, why don't you give it to me? If it's all one, then whether it's in your pocket or my pocket, it's all the same. Or if you say that everything is false, then why do you eat? That's also false. Eating is also false. So it's not... This philosophy doesn't correspond with reality. We see, practically, there are so many varieties. So that is the mistake of the impersonalists. They think that because the Absolute Truth is absolute, doesn't need anything else to describe it, doesn't require any material thing to compare it to describe it, that therefore nothing material exists. And they also consider that if the Absolute Truth is perfect as complete, and complete, as the Upanishads also say, Purnam, Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Bhaktam, Purnam Adachyate, then there is no need of anything else but the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth need not have any manifestations. But this verse of the Upanishads, Purnat Purnam Udachyate, from the complete comes more complete. And the Upanishads also describe that the Absolute Truth is the source of all manifestations. It's like the Vedanta Sutra that starts off, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now we shall inquire into the Absolute Truth. Vedanta Sutra is based upon the codes of the Upanishads. So, in the next verse, in the next sutra, Srila Vyasadeva describes that the Absolute Truth is the source of all emanations. Janmadyasya yataha. That is janmadi, janmaadi, beginning with creation. That means creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And this is described in the Upanishads, what is the Absolute Truth? Yatova imani bhutani jayante. The Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates. Yena jatani jivanti, it is that by which everything is maintained. Yat prayantyabhishang vishanti, it is that into which everything enters. Tad vijigyasasva, that is the subject which should be inquired into. Tad brahmeti, that is known as the Absolute Truth. So the Upanishads, which describe the Absolute Truth, describe it as the source of all emanations. And the Upanishads also describe that it is the Absolute Truth is not possible to be understood simply by our brain power. Namedhyana bahuna shruteina. Not simply by our intelligence, nor by great learning, can the Absolute Truth be understood. So, the Absolute Truth remains a mystery to those who do not come to the Bhagavad path, which describes the categories of emanations from the Absolute Truth. That janmadi asya yataha, that source of all emanations, is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Bhagavan Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has appeared as the son of Vasudeva. So this again appears to be a contradiction, because if he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and if he is the Absolute Truth, then why is he the son of Vasudeva? He is that upon which everything depends, yet he depends upon a father for birth, it appears so. Nevertheless, Vyasadeva says, Satyam Param Dhimahi, he is the Absolute Truth who is to be meditated upon. So how to understand this? This, of course, is not very easily understandable. It's not understandable simply by mundane logic. But there is transcendental logic by which it can be understood. When we say transcendental logic, that doesn't mean it's some kind of word jugglery and that it's illogical. It simply means that mundane logic cannot reach into the transcendental realm. The key to understanding, Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has described, the key to understanding the Absolute Truth is that we have to accept His achintya shakti, His inconceivable potencies. This is the whole crux of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have many times heard this phrase, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a term which Prabhupada uses again and again and again. He doesn't just say, sometimes he will say God, but generally in his books, especially when he's very philosophically, definitively expounding on the Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, on the science of knowledge of God, he uses the term Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, without understanding or without accepting this point that the Supreme Absolute Truth Personality of Godhead has inconceivable potencies, it is not possible to understand Him. In his introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam, before he begins describing any of these subject matters, Srila Prabhupada starts by making showing a very interesting angle on how this Bhagavatam should be studied. Prabhupada writes that the concept of God and the concept of the Absolute Truth are not on the same level. Generally people think of God as the all-powerful, and the Absolute Truth is accepted as the source of all emanations. And Prabhupada goes on to show that what is meant by God and what is meant by the Absolute Truth, actually that is the same. But without understanding that God is the Absolute Truth, one cannot understand God. And without understanding that the Absolute Truth is God, one cannot understand the Absolute Truth. Without understanding that God has inconceivable potencies, one cannot understand God. And without understanding that the Absolute Truth has inconceivable potencies, we cannot understand the Absolute Truth. If we simply say God, but we don't accept His inconceivable potencies, then we cannot understand Him. That is why there is so much confusion in theology all over the world. Theology devoid of knowledge of the Absolute Truth. As Srila Prabhupada used to say, people say that God is great, but they do not know how great He is. Generally people who doubt the existence of God, they say so. Then why is there so much suffering in the world if there is God? Without understanding the science of God and our relationship with Him, such foolish ideas come about. Classic theological problem in the Western world is, why is there suffering in the world? That if God is all-powerful and all-good, then why does He allow so much suffering, which is so much evil? If He's good and He's powerful, He should stop all the suffering. Because they think that God's job is to make arrangements for our happiness. We are God and He should be the Yogamaya potency which arranges for our Leela. That's what they think. But they don't realize that we are suffering because we are rascals. Instead they say God is a rascal because He doesn't arrange for our happiness. Some years ago, there was a book written by a Jewish rabbi by the name of Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna was his name. So he had quite a good name. But he came to the conclusion that actually God is all good, but he's not all-powerful. He's a nice guy, but he can't really solve our problems. We should still pray to him, and he can try and help us. You know, he's like a kind grandfather, retired general from the army or something like that. He's kind of powerful, but not all-powerful. So many misunderstandings will come unless we know the science of God. Therefore, the Bhagavatam states, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. This is the scientific knowledge of God by which one is liberated from all misconceptions. That's why Srila Prabhupada, he took so much trouble to translate this Bhagavatam, and that we insisted that we should study this and have classes on it. Otherwise, without understanding this, there will be confusion. Same thing in... Unless we understand the inconceivable potency of the Absolute Truth, we cannot understand the Absolute Truth. This is the mistake of the Mayavadis, because they don't accept the inconceivable potency of the Absolute Truth. Then they come to various absurd conclusions, that they say that ultimately everything is one, which is absurd, because everything is not one. If I say to you, I am very hungry, and you say, don't worry, I will eat some food. Does that make very good sense? You say, well, we're all one, so if I eat, then you should be full up. It doesn't work, it doesn't make any sense. If we say that, well, we're all one, so if one of us gets liberated, then everyone should get liberated. And anyway, why is there any difference between liberated and non-liberated stages? If it's all one, why should you even bother for liberation? And that's what Mayavad philosophy comes to. They say, well, it's all the same, everything's all the same, so... whether you follow moral principles or not, it's all the same. This Mayavad was preached by Shankaracharya, who is the Lord Shiva. He is in charge of the mode of ignorance. Because by spreading this philosophy, it becomes an excuse for totally degraded sense gratification. So they say that, well, this world, how can it exist? Because if everything is Brahman, then... How can it exist at all? Therefore, it's all false. As Prabhupada notes, they say that it's false, but they're very busy trying to enjoy the falsity. But they say that if you accept it as real, that means that everything is Brahman, so Brahman has been transformed. And how can that be? That's not possible. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the proper understanding that Brahman is not transformed, but his energy is transformed. The energy and the energetic are not different, as Vedanta Sutra states. Shakti, Shakti Matar, Abheda. But still, there is difference. There is difference and non-difference. This is the perfect understanding of the Absolute Truth. So the Absolute Truth has to be understood in terms of the... from our vantage point, the Absolute Truth has to be understood in terms of different categories. Those who are on the highest platform of understanding the Absolute Truth, they simply think of Him as their darling lover, Sri Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan are not very much concerned with philosophy. They simply want to love Krishna. But to come to such a platform, it is necessary to understand who is Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth. For that matter, for that purpose, Srimad Bhagavatam has described the categories of the Absolute Truth. 10 different categories, leading up to the ultimate category, Sri Krishna, the shelter of all living beings. But to understand the greatness of Krishna, that we are not Krishna, we have to surrender to Krishna. We have to understand the science of Krishna. That is described in detail in Srimad Bhagavatam. Atra Sarga Visargas Cha. What is it? Stana Poshanam Utaya Manvantarishanu Katha Nirodho Mukti Rashrayaha. The 10 categories of subject are original creation, consequent creation, further creation, maintenance of the cosmic order, nourishment, then the creative impetus, the desire for creation, description of the different manvantaras, the different changes of manus, description of the different avatars, incarnations of the Supreme Lord, the winding up of the cosmic manifestation, the winding up, the end of the destruction of the cosmic manifestation, liberation, and ultimately the supreme shelter of all living beings, Krishna. So these categories have to be understood. In this verse is being described the nature of the jiva and how the jivas appear to be different. They appear to be different according to the different forms they take. Just as fire manifests differently from wood. If there's a large piece of wood, you get a large flame. You get a small piece of wood, you get a small flame. But the nature of fire is the same whether in a small spark or a blazing fire. So in the same way, the jiva sometimes gets the body of a germ. Yes, tvindra gopama tvindra. They're sometimes the body of a germ and sometimes the body of Indra in the heavenly planets. But the constitutional nature of the jiva is the same, that he is the eternal, fragmental, part and parcel of the Supreme Absolute Truth. He is part and parcel of the Supreme Jiva, who is known as Krishna. As Prabhupada has quoted in this purport, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. There are many eternal living beings, they are all conscious, but one is the Supreme, that is Krishna. So all these points have to be understood very clearly. What is the nature of the jiva? All these five subjects are there in Bhagavad Gita. Who is God? Who are the living beings? What is the material nature? Or what are the different energies of the Supreme Lord? How these all interact under the influence of the time factor? No, the Supreme Lord is not under the influence of the time factor, but how the material nature and the jivas interact under the influence of the time factor. And subsequently, the jivas create karmic reactions. So all these subjects have to be understood very minutely. What is the nature of the Supreme Lord? What does it mean to be God? Simply if we say God, I believe in God, what does that mean? We find even people like Einstein speaking of God. If you examine what his concept of God is, it's actually atheism. He's saying the word God, but he doesn't accept the supreme absolute source of all energies. Practically everything that's going on in the name of religion in the world, without proper knowledge of God, it's not much more developed than atheism. Of course, it is better than atheism, but it is highly undeveloped. Just like mostly people think that God, his greatest glory is creating this material world. God is the creator, as if his greatest glory is to create this prison house. And his only job is to administer the prison house. His only job is we go to the church and pray to him, give me this and give me that. And he has to run around making arrangements. Not understanding his glorious existence beyond this material world. Or there is the concept God is all light, all power, God is nature. All these concepts come because people do not have scientific knowledge of God. So there are so many points to be understood, they have to be understood very clearly. We'll find in this Srimad Bhagavatam so many different categories are delineated. Different kinds of souls, eternally conditioned, eternally liberated. And then among the conditioned souls, there are devotees and there are demons. Among the devotees, there are materially motivated devotees and pure devotees. The effect of the three modes of material nature. So all these categories have to be understood very clearly. Otherwise, at any stage of our development in Krishna consciousness, there is the danger of again becoming confused. Unless we understand this philosophy very clearly, then there is the danger. There are different dangers we can fall into. One is mayavad. Generally, devotees don't become mayavadis because devotee means someone who started to develop his love for Krishna. And mayavad is so much envious and cold and hard. And mostly devotees, they're not attracted to that. But there may be inclinations towards sahajya, means taking Krishna consciousness very cheaply. There may be tendencies towards smartavad or karmavad, in which we become very much attached to different rules and regulations governing auspiciousness and inauspiciousness, not having faith that Krishna protects his devotees. In this way, there may be tendencies towards demigod worship, or so many different kinds of speculations. the varieties of speculations that those who have come to Krishna consciousness can deviate into is quite astonishing. There are many, many varieties of speculations. Maya has many, many different ideas how we can enjoy this material world. Even in the name of Krishna consciousness, we may cheat ourselves that we are becoming Krishna conscious, when actually we are doing everything simply for our own enjoyment. So proper philosophical understanding is required, and sincerity is required. Sincerity means anyabhidashita shunyam jnanakama dhyanavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti ruttama. Not to harbour any personal desire in our hearts, but simply to want to serve Krishna. And that desire will come, that will be nourished by studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, because Srimad Bhagavatam is not simply an academic treatise on the Absolute Truth, but it is glorification of the Absolute Truth through Krishna. And it is the nature of the living being to glorify Krishna. So by hearing about Krishna from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that inclination to praise Krishna, to surrender to Krishna, is reawakened. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Shaddha Kabu Noi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Kariye Udoi. By hearing and chanting about Krishna in the association of devotees, the natural desire to love Krishna reawakens within the heart. So we are trying to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. At the same time, we understand it's not some academic subject matter. It's not that by passing Bhakti Shastra exam, one goes back to Godhead. Bhakti Shastra exam is required, but the spirit of surrender, that is required. So that is actually most important. But the spirit of surrender, because we are rascals, that is our position, we've come to this material world. So that spirit of surrender will tend to become again deviated unless we properly understand the science of Krishna. So there are many, many points to be understood. We should try to understand. The basic point is very clear and very simple, and we should not lose sight of that. We should not lose sight of that. Sometimes devotees become so much absorbed in philosophical niceties or philosophical details that they almost forget the most basic point, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're all His eternal servants, and we're supposed to serve Him. So hearing and understanding this philosophy are very much required, and practical application of this philosophy by engaging in devotional service, that is also required. Both are required. We have to, that's why Prabhupada gave us this program, sadhana of hearing and chanting, and then another kind of sadhana, engaging in various kinds of services, such as building the temple, cooking for Krishna, and so on. That is also sadhana. All these different kinds of services, they're also sadhana. Sadhana means that practice which brings us to the sadhya, or the desired goal. So practical activity in Krishna's service is also required for our own purification. Because by serving Krishna, having heard about Krishna, then we come to realize, yes, actually it's a fact, I am the servant of Krishna. Without engaging in Krishna's service, in various services to help push on the Sankirtan movement, we cannot actually understand the philosophy in these books. On the other hand, if we only perform various services but we don't study this philosophy, then after some time our attitude will become mundane. Without understanding why we are doing what we are doing, we won't want to do what we are doing. We will think, why am I working so hard? I could do this same work and earn lots of money and be happy. Why should I work hard for this Hare Krishna movement? But every day we hear, we should work hard for Krishna because Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And we are meant to serve Him. And when we serve Him in that consciousness, our service becomes the source of all transcendental bliss. But the same service, if we do it, if our consciousness is contaminated, then we simply become miserable. So in conclusion, we should try to understand this philosophy very clearly and engage in Krishna's service enthusiastically. In this way, gradually become purified from material contamination and attain the perfection of life, which is pure love of Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Is there any question, please?
This matter is known by Mahavishnu. Whether or not Krishna is remembered about
us. Does Krishna remember about the material world? Krishna is cognizant of everything. In that same verse of Bhagavatam, Abhigya, he knows everything. At the same time, Swarat, he's not affected by this material world. He's independent of it. Certainly Krishna is thinking of us, forgotten souls here in this material world. Otherwise, if he had forgotten, then why would he have sent Prabhupada? He remembered us, so he sent Prabhupada. This is the evidence. This is the evidence that Krishna is thinking of us. He hasn't forgotten us. We have forgotten him. He hasn't forgotten us. Is there any other question? It might be in future, but it isn't now, as far as I know. Any other question related to the class? Not related to the
class.
That is his own desire. That is his own desire. He doesn't need anyone else to enjoy with. But nevertheless, he expands himself for further enjoyment. It's not that he's insufficient or incomplete without others, but to expand his enjoyment unlimitedly more and more, he expands into the various living beings, who are also not different from him, inasmuch as they are produced from him. So in one sense, when Krishna is enjoying with the parts and parcels, he's enjoying with himself, because they are expansions of his self. Not that the living beings are in all respects equal with him, therefore they're called Vibhinamsha. They are his Amsha, that means they are parts and parcels of him. But they are at the same time Vibhinamsha, they are separated. When it said you should understand, we should also understand the limits of our understanding. We can't understand in the way that Krishna understands. Krishna understands the movement of every atom, so we can't understand how exactly each creation is being created. But the principles of creation should be understood. That Krishna is the supreme controller, and he manifests the material nature, and he manifests Lord Brahma, who under his direction organizes the material nature. So the principles should be understood. Even if we tried to, it's not possible to understand all the details. Some general description is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that we should try to understand that. When it's said that we should try to understand, it's understood that we can't understand fully. It's not possible to fully understand Krishna. It's not even possible to fully understand one cell in our body. So that means we should try to understand it within the limits of our understanding. How Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everything is going under his direction. We should try to understand this. Yes, please. In the spiritual world, there is no concept of time, yet Krishna is the origin of everything. Well, there is time in the spiritual world, but not in the way that we understand it in this material world. Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world also go on within a time framework, within certain times. At certain times he gets up, and at certain times he pretends to go to sleep. But time, as in this material world, which has the destructive, devastating effect, is not present in the spiritual world. Nothing is ever destroyed. In this material world, we measure time by how it destroys. A young man means a person whose body is only 20 years dead, 20 years closer to death from birth. An old man means he's relatively close to death. But in the spiritual world, there's no such concept. Because no one ever dies and nothing is ever destroyed. Krishna is eternally young. Yeah, what's the question? What is it said? Yeah. It said, the last trap of Maya, yes. Why Mayavad is said to be the last snare of Maya? last trap of Maya. It probably translated back into Russian like that. Why? Because an impersonalist is a person who understands that this material world is miserable. At least theoretically he understands that. And he endeavors to understand the absolute truth which is beyond this material world. But if he makes the mistake of thinking that the absolute truth is impersonal, then without knowing it, he gets deflected back into the material energy. The cause of our material life is envy of Krishna. And the effect of material life is repeated suffering. So if we see the effect is repeated suffering, and we try to get free from that without seeing the root cause of our suffering, then we can never be successful in mitigating our suffering. So the Mayavad thinks that he can just talk away the problems by imagining that he's one with reality, with the cosmos, which he's not. So although he's on an apparently spiritual path, he's not really going anywhere. It's like running on a treadmill. A treadmill is for exercise. It's like a conveyor belt, and you run and run and run, but you don't get anywhere. You remain within the material world, despite performing so many austerities. And you may become apparently detached from material enjoyment, but because you don't serve Krishna, then ultimately you don't get actual liberation. This is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeni ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhayaha ahruhya kritshrena parang padang tata patantyadho naduta yashmadangraya. Here the term is used, avishuddha buddhayaha, those who are possessed of not fully purified intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence. Buddhayaha means one who has such intelligence. Shuddha buddhi means purified intelligence. Vishuddha buddhi means completely purified intelligence. And avishuddha buddhi means not completely purified intelligence. So this verse describes those who have got not completely purified intelligence. Their intelligence may be purified in as much that they see that this material world is miserable and they try to detach themselves from sense gratification. So they are vimuktamanina. They consider themselves to be completely liberated, but they are not, because they neglect to worship Krishna's lotus feet. And therefore, even though they perform severe austerities and penances for the sake of liberation, and even though they can get temporarily detached from this material world and go to the impersonal Brahman, because they make the mistake of neglecting to serve Krishna's lotus feet, they must fall down again into the material atmosphere. So Mayavad is very dangerous, because you think that you're becoming spiritually advanced, but actually, by thinking that they are one with God, they make more offenses to Krishna, and they end up in a worse position than the gross materialist. Just like Jagai and Madhai, they were greatly sinful, but they were delivered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they were very easily delivered by him. And there was even one bogus sannyasi who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took food in his house, even though he was a sense enjoyer. He took food in his house just to give him the chance to do some service.
Yeah.
But he refused to eat with the Mayavadi sannyasis, even though they were strictly following rules and regulations and austerities, because they were offensive to Lord, because they were offensive to Lord Krishna. Lord Chaitanya would not eat with them. So Mayavadi is very dangerous. Don't be Mayavadi. What is guaranteed liberation? What is guaranteed liberation? When we fully surrender to Krishna. That is the proper position of liberation. Pure devotional service to Krishna. Because that is our constitutional position.
Mm. Yes, lady?
You can study the Paramatma as Krishna. Krishna is Paramatma. Paramatma means the Supreme Living Being. Now the Paramatma feature who is in everyone's heart is an expansion of the original form of the personality of Godhead, Krishna. So if we understand Krishna, then we understand all his expansions and his energies. But if you try to understand the expansions without understanding Krishna, then you can't understand. Or you'll only have partial understanding. Just like if you try to understand the sunlight without understanding the sun, is it possible you'll have very good understanding? You could have some understanding. You can say that the sunlight is all-pervading, is very bright, and it's warm. But without understanding its ultimate source, the sun, our understanding of the sunlight will remain incomplete and imperfect. So just try to understand Krishna, and then all other understandings will follow. Yasmin vigyatam sarva detam vigyatam bhavati. By understanding Him, everything else is understood. The Paramatma is personal, but there may be those who meditate upon Him in an impersonal way. Generally, the yogis who meditate upon Him, not generally, but many of them, they make the mistake of thinking themselves to be Him. And they merge into His body in an impersonal liberation. Mm. I was going to ask you about Tilak. You don't have any on. She doesn't have any Tilak on.
Vishnu was the Tilak.
Huh? Why? Why water Tilak? Why not nice Gopi Chandan Tilak? You don't have any? I'll give you some if you want. Devotee means nice Tilak. How do they manifest practical activity? What do you mean? I can't understand the question. In our practical activity? No, well, that's the whole idea. We don't want it to manifest in our practical activity. We don't want to be Mayavadis. We want to serve Krishna. I hope Mayavad isn't manifesting in our practical activity. Don't be a Mayavadi. Wear Tilak. That's how it manifests, by not wearing Tilak. How are we doing for time? All right, I'm going to stop here now, because in this material world, we're under the control of time. Oh yeah, I'm supposed to announce. I'm